Lieutenant Governor, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing today?
We are doing wonderfully. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning.
Great to be with you always.
You've got a the big seafood cook-off. We have a local representative in that competition. We're kind of rooting her on. Explain who's representing Shreveport this year.
Well, you pronounce that name for me because I don't want to mispronounce it.
Nima.
DeGrazia.
Yeah.
DeGrazia. There you go. Well, I tell you, it's going to be a great competition, and it really means a lot to that chef that wins, because then they go on to compete in the convention center during the restaurant show, and they will represent Louisiana around the country and brings new attention to their restaurant, to their city. So it's done a lot of good for a lot of the chefs that have won. So hopefully we'll have a good local chef, and we're rooting for all of them, and may the best chef win.
Oh, definitely. We talked with you last time about, because we have a little bit of a problem here, and I know you see it around the state. We're shifting gears now with litter enforcement. And you have some of the latest numbers, I assume, on how big a problem this is for our state. What are you looking at?
Well, I tell you, you know, up until I wrote 800 letters last year to people that got reported for litter, and please don't do it again. This year we passed a new law. You can actually report someone, they get a ticket in the mail. And if you get a ticket for litter or you pick up litter for a day, you're about 80% less likely to litter. So this is a way to curtail those people that do litter. Only about 22% of Louisianans litter, but they litter a lot. They have no regard for throwing stuff in the back of the pickup or out the window. So we've made great progress, but we've got a long way to go. And this is just another tool in our toolbox. 1-855-LA-LITTER. Don't worry. You got to sign an affidavit that you did see that car with that license plate litter. They don't get your name and know you turned them in. And if they don't want to pay the fine, they can go fight it in court, or they can get service hours to go pick up litter.
Now, do you have to or video of them actually littering?
No, you just got to sign an affidavit that you saw that vehicle at that time in that location with the license number and verify that you did see that vehicle throw litter out.
And did you say we've had 800 tickets go out through this system?
Last year, I wrote 800 letters of people because we couldn't give a ticket.
Okay.
This year, so far this year, we've given 50 tickets. And then several for illegal dumping. We've got cameras out catching people illegal dumping tires. We've been working with DEQ to clean up these tire dumps. I tell you, the state agencies, DOTD, Wildlife, Fishery, have really become great partners in the fight for litter, as well as a lot of our mayors and sheriffs. This has become a movement, and we're announcing that Love Our Waterway campaign. Excuse me, I lost my voice this week. But the Love Our Waterway campaign kicks off September 1st. We're going to clean up every waterway, lake, and stream over the month of September to keep this momentum going.
Okay, in terms of Love Our Waterways, you need volunteers. You need groups to step up and help, right? What can folks do?
Absolutely. They can sign up just like you did for Keep Louisiana Beautiful, Love the Boot Week. You can sign up at lovelawaterways.org, and you can go by yourself. You can look for another group. We're partnering with Ducks Unlimited, CCA, all the charter fishing groups, all the marinas in the state, Boy Scouts, so anybody can get involved. And this is a chance to really keep a continued impact in cleaning up Louisiana.
Billy, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, we're deep into summer, and one of our favorite things that we did one year was we rented a cabin at Lake Claiborne and had an extended weekend. We had family come in. We got some great state parks that we can take advantage of here during the summer. You don't have to take off and go a long way to go on vacation.
No, and we're right now promoting staycation, which we did coming out of COVID. But because of the cost of gas and the airline tickets going up, people are staying closer to home. So we're doing a real campaign this summer in the drive market. And then we're doing a lot of social media. all the great things to do in South Louisiana, and then we're filming up in North Louisiana, getting people in South Louisiana to go around and see a part of Louisiana you haven't seen. It's a great way to invest right here in Louisiana and help a lot of local mom-and-pop shops and restaurants through the slow summertime. So we're going to be doing a big push for that to get people to travel all over Louisiana.
Billy, I'm going to throw a curveball at you. You know I always do. We had Curtis 50 Cent Jackson in town last week. He essentially did a fireside chat with hundreds of folks who showed up, outlining his plan, saying that he's really coming. He's really going to be filming here. He has spent more than $11 million. How big a game changer can this be for Northwest Louisiana?
It could really change this whole scope of filming and the movie industry for North Louisiana. And, you know, it's unbelievable that we have people like that, that really loves where they're from, and to invest that kind of money. And I hope that we can continue to support his efforts with the tax credits for the films, and even listen to some of the people in the industry to tweak those things so more Louisiana people get speaking parts in movies, and things like other states are doing to encourage more investment in their state, and to make them have the comfort level that we're going to be around for a while in the movie industry. Some things to really show that the state's supporting that efforts, because it's something that we took a hiccup the year we got rid of the tax credit. Mm-hmm. It's back. Mm-hmm. A lot of films are going overseas. We can't do much about that, but we can sure encourage them and make Louisiana welcome and for the industry. And it could, like you said, it could be a game changer for North Louisiana.
If he creates something in Shreveport-Bossier like Tyler Perry did in Atlanta, that is absolutely huge. I mean, imagine, can you kind of explain what that did in Atlanta and what that would mean here?
Yeah, it would give a whole new industry that really has a trickle-down effect to all the local businesses. You'd have people move into that area because of the interest he brought in the film industry and all. Yeah, so it will be a game changer.
Did a little research on all the 4th of July celebrations that are coming up. This is the big 250th birthday. Of course, we have a huge event here that KTBS sponsors. We've got these kind of events all over the state, though, right?
We really do. And I tell you, we opened up a new exhibit at the Capitol Museum yesterday. It's called We the People. And it's a filming where a gentleman went around the country taking pictures and just bringing pride back to America with all the craziness going on. I sat there and watched a 7-minute video of these pictures of Americans around the country. There's a lot of local pictures back in time from all over Louisiana, and it just makes you proud to be an American. So it's a great exhibit. It'll be there all through this year, and then we'll be celebrating all the great events around the state for the 250th anniversary.
Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, thanks for your time, sir.
Always have a great weekend.
You bet.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We are back. We're going to have Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State. She's going to be joining us in about 15 minutes. Saturday is Election Day, and boy, turnout's expected to be low. My buddy Scott Hughes is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike is out for a little while. He's enjoying some vacay. You have my shirt on that I can't find anywhere.
Well, since this is radio, let's be a little more descriptive. I think I'm wearing a shirt you wish you owned.
I do wish I owned
it. I'm not actually wearing your clothes.
No, you're not. You have the USA Men's National Team jersey.
Yes, I do.
The authentic jersey, which you pre-planned for and ordered it because they're hard to find now.
I ordered mine a month ago. It was a Father's Day present to myself. Thank you to my children. but yes, the U.S. Men's National Team, soccer, American football.
Okay, tonight, 9 o'clock, the match starts. We play Turkey. We've looked really good. I've actually been very pleasantly surprised. You're a soccer nut, soccer guru. I know you're watching a lot of the World Cup. Does the U.S. really have a shot?
Well, I think if you back up 2 weeks before the start of the tournament, I would have said, we're going to be competitive. We may go farther than we've ever gone before. The U.S. has really only made what's called the round of 16. Mm-hmm. There's pool play for those who understand how international sports works. You play several teams. The top team in that little group moves forward.
Yep.
Then it's a single elimination tournament.
Mm-hmm.
We've made the single elimination tournament before, called the round of 16.
Yep.
This year, they actually expanded the tournament. There's more teams, so there's a round of 32, then a round of 16, kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament.
Okay.
And so most of us thought that the USA should win their bracket or get out of pool play and make the round of 16. Now I think people are expecting a win in the round of 16. They're expecting us to win a game or two in the elimination bracket. The U.S. has looked fabulous. The team is gelling. And to be honest, there's question marks with some of the big-time programs around the country. England has stumbled. You've seen Brazil hasn't just been a world beater this time.
Right.
Messi's great, but, Messi's all Argentina maybe has.
Right.
So the USA is going to be competitive.
Germany, I wasn't impressed.
Germany has stumbled. A lot of the big surprise, if you're a soccer person, is the rise of the African nations.
Yeah, South Africa's made it.
South Africa had an upset last night. I watched that game. It was a fabulous game. One of my favorite players, Son, who plays for Tottenham Spurs, best Oriental player that we've had in years, plays for South Korea. Even he was unable to hit the bar twice last night. They just couldn't score.
Yeah.
And South Africa, the RSA, the Republic of South Africa, defeated South Korea, which was a huge upset.
Absolutely, a big deal. So what do you watch for tonight? We play Turkey. Has Turkey had any wins yet?
No, Turkey's been eliminated.
Okay.
And it's a four-person pool. That's the group that we're in. It's called group. We're in a group with four teams. This is our third game. We won the first two, if you're just waking up to USA Soccer, which means we're with two wins, we're going to move on. We've won the pool. So it means nothing to us because we cannot improve our seed at all. Turkey has lost both its games. They're out, although they have to play the consolation game, this one, their third game. So the game means nothing to anybody except pride.
Okay.
Turkey's known for being a rough team with nothing to play for. We're a little worried. So if you're the USA, you want to win the game. Yes, you don't want to lose momentum. The game means nothing, but you don't want to get anybody hurt, and you don't want any cards. So you may see a lot of the second teamers tonight.
That's being good for me. Our last minute, when we move to the knockout rounds, so the top 32, do we know yet who will be in our bracket? Do we know? I mean, there's a lot of talk about, England could be in our bracket. Do we know that yet?
Well, we don't know who all is going to be in the bracket, especially at the England level, because you're looking at who's going to win the other side. That's eventually in the round of eight, the round of four, the round of two.
Okay.
And we could be crossed with England. What we know fairly sure is we know we are playing one of the best third place finishers. The way the field works, there's a couple of third place teams based on goal differential. It really can. FIFA formula.
Okay.
We believe with about 99% accuracy now that we are going to play Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Okay.
It's going to be in California next week.
Okay.
They won their game yesterday, kind of a surprise win.
Mm-hmm.
We think that puts them in one of the best positions as a third place team. And it really looks like, unless a lot of things go crazy, that'll be our first game in the knockout round.
Okay. 9 o'clock tonight, USA, Turkey. We'll be watching. I think I'm going to have to get a long nap, then get up and watch tonight.
And I'll be wearing my shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's on Fox for those if you're on DirecTV, sorry, you may not get it. You need to go somewhere to a watch party because the whole problem with Fox, network and DirecTV, but for those with regular TV, it's Fox. And if not, find a place. Go watch.
Yeah.
Get on in a really positive story for our country right now.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Nancy Landry, Secretary of State, joining us in about 10 minutes. Election Day is Saturday. Everything you need to know about it is coming up.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Secretary of State Nancy Landry talking about Saturday's Election Day and what you can expect and how busy she thinks the polls will be. That is next, right here on Kiel.
Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
All right. right, election coming up this Saturday. Early voting is over. Secretary of State Nancy Landry in studio, Mike and McCarty. And first of all, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for driving all the way up here just to be on our show.
My honored. Pleasure.
I've got a question.
Great to see y'all.
I like to early vote now. I then you don't have to, you're not, if something comes up on election day, then you're hosed. But every time I early vote, I think machines are much nicer than the ones in the school when I go. Are there plans to upgrade all of the voting machines?
Yes, great question. The machines on early voting are more modern machines.
It's like a big screen.
It's like a big iPad.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a ballot marking device, and you select your ballot, and then you press the cast vote button at the end. And the ones we use on election day are the old machines that are, some of them are over 35 years old.
And older than me, yeah.
All of them are over 30. And we have been working diligently to replace those. We've been in a procurement process or pre-procurement process now for 4 years.
Because those new machines, I could even get Netflix on there. So I was in there for a while.
They are not connected to the internet.
Thank you.
So you cannot get Netflix on them. Never, ever connected to the internet.
Right.
I was looking at the early voting numbers. It's kind of sad, Nancy. What is wrong? People just don't go vote anymore.
I think this is the first, primary runoff election that we've had in a long time. So we have nothing to compare it to, but there just wasn't a lot of interest, it seemed like. And turnout was around 15. We think from early voting, we're predicting it to be around 15% to 20% for Saturday. But for overall turnout, but it was low, but the numbers were kind of different. There were a higher percentage of Republicans came out, so there was a little more interest in the Republican runoff than mm-hmm. there was in the Democratic runoff for Senate. But everybody needs to go out and vote on Saturday, bring those numbers up so yes. we can save face.
It's a closed primary system, so mm-hmm. people that maybe didn't vote last time that don't realize that, when they go vote, they're going to, like, if they want to vote in the Republican Senate race with Letlow and Fleming, if they're a registered Democrat, they're not going to be able to.
That's right. This is the new closed party primary system. The legislature enacted it in 2024. This year is the first year that it was implemented. We had the first primary in May, and this is the primary runoff. So if the only statewide election we have in this election is the U.S. Senate race. And so that race is a runoff for the two Democratic candidates and a runoff for the two Republican candidates that are left after the first primary. And if you are a Republican, you'll vote in the Republican primary. If you're a Democrat, you'll vote in the Democratic primary. And if you are a no party voter, meaning you're not affiliated with any party, then you can choose which one to vote in, unless you voted in May and made a choice of Republican or Democrat, in which case you made that choice for both May and June elections.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I'm no party. I made the choice in May. So I can't change it Saturday and go, I want to switch and I want to vote in the other one.
That's right. You made the choice for May and June. You didn't change your party affiliation. It was just the ballot you were choosing, but you had to choose for both May and June, and you have to stick with one.
Okay. So this is the first election cycle that we've gone through with the close primary.
Right.
Now, I remember some confusion during all the redistricting and the decisions to be made that said, okay, we're not going to do closed primary for this. Explain what happened and what got changed.
Yeah, right. When the Supreme Court ruled in the Calais case, which was a challenge to the redistricting maps for the congressional redistricting maps, they ruled on that, I think it was in May. And then those congressional elections were suspended because the districts were declared unconstitutional. And so they were rescheduled by the legislature for the fall. So they'll happen in November and December, and they will be regular open primaries like we used to do for this election only, because there was no time to do a primary a closed party primary. So we will have a primary in November and a runoff in December, like we used to do for Congress this year.
Okay.
But unless lawmakers change the law currently, the congressional races later will be closed.
That's right. Okay. So the law that they passed to make this fall an open primary was a temporary law, and it only applies to this election.
As Henry Blake says, clear as mother's milk.
Yeah, exactly. curious, too, if I'm a registered Green Party or other party, what can I do between now and Saturday to vote in the Senate race?
You will not be able to vote in this closed party primary if you belong to another party, an other party like the Green or Libertarian or anything else. Some people wrote in a party. They have the pizza party. That makes them a member of a party. And so they can't vote on that race. But they need to check their ballot at govote.com or the GoVote mobile app. You can find your sample ballot there, because there may be other things on the ballot, local tax props or local elections. Those will be on the ballot, and they are not closed party primary items. And so you can vote on those no matter what part.
Now, is your office in charge of the GoVote app?
We are, yes. It's an award-winning app. It's really a great
kudos
app. Thank you.
I love the GoVote app.
GAUX,
GoVote. It gives you your ballot beforehand. It tells you what districts you're in. It tells you where to go. It's fabulous.
It is. It's an awesome app. You can also change your registration information on that app and find out who your elected officials are.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a very handy app, and you can mark your sample ballot and actually take it into the voting booth with you so that you can remember. And that's really handy when we have a bunch of constitutional amendments mm-hmm. or a bunch of tax props and you can't remember. You researched it ahead of time, but when you get in the voting booth, you're like, oh, I can't remember which one I wanted to vote yes on and which one I wanted to vote no on. You can mark it and bring it in with you, and it's not recorded in our office at all how you marked it. It's just on your phone. And so, okay.
But just the fact that you can look and go, here are the amendments, let me look these up beforehand.
Right. It's a great app. I encourage everybody. And you can sign up at our office too for reminders. You'll get text reminders when there's an election, so you won't miss any of those small elections. And we don't spam you. We don't give your phone number to anyone else. We're, in fact, restricted by law to not giving it. So you can do that with confidence. And I have it, and it's very handy. That just tells you today there's an election. Mm-hmm. Remember to go vote. It also says thank you for early voting, so you know you early voted and no one else went and early voted in your name or anything. And then it tracks your ballot if you do absentee mail. It's very handy.
Let me ask you this, Nancy Landry, Secretary of State. How soon would you anticipate having the results Saturday night? Are we a little faster than California?
We are quite a bit faster than California.
Amen. Hallelujah.
They just take weeks, and I can't understand that. But we always get our results on election night. And that's something we pride ourselves on. And so there are always a few parishes we're waiting on at the end, but things do happen, and we have to wait on little delays. But we always have the elections, and we always have the results on election night.
So since we opened that can of worms, mail-in ballots, what's the deadline for us, Louisiana, to accept mail-in ballots? Because California, apparently, just whenever. Oh, look, another mail-in ballot came in. Oh, no, another batch of 20,000 mail-in ballots we just found.
Yeah.
We're going to count them weeks later. What's our deadline?
I don't understand that mindset that would allow the election to just continue on for days after the end of election day. In Louisiana, your ballot has to be in by 4:30 p.m. the day before the election.
It has to be in the office of wherever you vote.
In the registrar voter's office, yes. But by 4:30 p.m., the day before the election, unless you're military or overseas, in which case federal law rules on that, and they can get it in on election day.
Military
and overseas. But everyone else has to have their ballot in the day before. And that's been the law for a while in Louisiana. So we have really good, secure absentee ballot rules in Louisiana. Our legislature has passed really great policies and laws around elections to make sure that our elections are safe and secure. And mm-hmm. I really want to hand it to them that they have done a great job. Every time I go and ask them to consider passing a law to improve our election integrity, they have done it. And our new governor, Governor Landry, has also signed all those laws into law, in all those bills into law. And so it's great having a supportive legislature and a supportive governor when we're trying to improve election integrity at the Secretary of State's
office.
Well,
I'll just quote, remember the Titans. When you're complimenting your office, attitude reflects leadership.
Yeah.
So it starts at the top. Just congratulations on just an awesome job you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And I do have to, give credit to my staff. I have the best staff of any state agency in state government. And they do an awesome job. They work very hard. Our elections division, they have been out there. Right now we're dealing with flooded precincts in Avoyelles Parish and St. Landry Parish. They've been out there in boats checking on the precincts, bringing water to victims while they're out there doing that, bringing supplies. And they're just outstanding. And they go above and beyond to make sure our elections are great in Louisiana. And they're the reason why, and our local partners, our registrars of voters and our clerks of courts, they're the reasons why we're ranked number 4 in the nation in election integrity. And so we're really proud of the work that they do and that all of us do as a team to make sure that our elections are safe and secure and people can vote with confidence.
Integrity in Louisiana. If I'd have told you that 30 years ago, you just said, oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Number four in the nation, and I want us to be number 1.
Yeah,
so I'm working to get us to number 1.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. We're doing a great job, I think, and we're going to continue. And in spite of all the changes the legislature has made with closing the party primaries and moving the elections, mm-hmm. we've continued to make election integrity a priority.
Well, thank you for coming up.
You bet. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Don't forget to vote Saturday.
Yes, vote Saturday. Polls open 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. to 8 p.m.
Thank you.
Secretary of State Nancy Landry, Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, the Reader's Digest version, because we're going to talk about it more in the 7 o'clock hour. The housing affordability bill that's passed, the president refusing...
It's passed Congress.
Yes, he's refusing to sign it. What's the holdup?
Well, apparently he wants to use it as political leverage. There's no holdup on the legislative side. They passed it overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. about one of the only bipartisan bills to get through Congress. And for the record, we have a piece in this. I run the Realtor Association.
Sure.
I was in D.C. last week lobbying for this bill.
What does the Housing Affordability Act do?
Well, it simply does what it says. It tries to make housing more affordable. It provides grants for people that want to build homes. It removes some regulations to make it easier to build homes.
Okay.
And the big thing they fought over late was it tries to prevent corporate buyers from amassing too many homes.
Okay.
Because they just become rental homes and you can't buy a home.
We got to figure out why the president's not signing it and what the holdup is. We'll do that in the 7 o'clock hour. Jordan Thomas with Red River United is going to join us in about 10-12 minutes to talk about the stipend for teachers. That is all on the way right here, 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. .1017 FM, 710 Keel on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Jordan Thomas with Red River United. Mike is out today, Jordan. I got my friend Scott Hughes here, but he's very, very well informed about what's been going on with this teacher stipend mess. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly to support the governor in his plan to move some of the MFP money to a teacher stipend. But that plan's on hold pending a court hearing next week in Baton Rouge. Is the mud less cloudy today or no?
I think no. And you describe, I think you described it as a mess, and I would agree.
So essentially, I know you were polling your members, maybe not specifically on this issue, but we don't yet know if the governor is ordering parishes to use some of the MFP money for a stipend, what cuts would be made? Is this the governor ordering cuts? Is that okay? Is that outside of his authority? How do your members feel about this? They obviously want a stipend.
Right. Well, and that's what we did, you know, and like you said, we surveyed our members and, you know, from throughout the state, and we looked at about 70% of our members, you know, obviously are, you know, finding getting a pay raise is important, or at least maintaining what we've gotten, because we have gotten these stipends for the past several years. But and we did specifically ask them about this executive order. And about 65% of our members said that they opposed this executive order. And, you know, I think we can go back to the constitutional amendment that we had where, you know, we looked at it from an educator standpoint and said, you know, listen, we, at the expense of our students, we don't want this money kind of thing. Like we, of course, we recognize we need a pay raise. You know, we would like to have at least a stipend in this scenario, but we want there to be, you know, another path forward rather than, you know, making cuts to our students.
Jordan, this is Scott Hughes. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is the position, I guess, of the teacher organizations vis-a-vis actually paying the, quote, stipend or pay raise? Because I know the judge is holding a hearing next week. There seems to be a lot of sniping about, oh, that order only affects the governor, not the legislature. Do you believe the order would enjoin the school districts from paying it out? Because once they start paying it out, you can't go get it back.
You know, I honestly do not have that answer. I don't know what they will do. You know, I know, you know, just here in Caddo Parish, you know, there was a little stipend that they were going to pay their employees at the end of June. And then because we're the uncertainty with the governor's, you know, executive order, you know, they've held up and, you know, pumped the brakes on that one. So, you know, I don't know. I know from the perspective of the superintendents, as I've talked to several of them throughout this area, you know, they're very concerned about what this is going to look like, you know, as far as, you know, impacting programs and things like that for our students. So I'm not sure how that will happen. I don't think anybody's going to joyfully just go ahead and do it without being, you know, it being in that you mandated, but, you know, but I guess we'll see.
And I guess a follow-up to that, to your knowledge, are any of the school districts litigants to GIS? I know that I think the lead litigants, Michael Falk, who I actually worked with years ago, he was the head, one of the superintendents here in the state and may have headed the Superintendents mm-hmm. Association. Are any of these school boards litigants to this, or is this just the I think the three or four citizen plaintiffs, even though they all have tremendous education backgrounds?
Right. I do know their superintendents, but I do know that you know, like, for example, St. Tammany Parish, their school board came out against it and were writing a resolution. So I think there is going to be some pushback, you know, throughout the state. So there are, you know, there's those concerns from some of the local parishes, you know, that would encompass the board rather than just being the superintendent.
Jordan, the last time the school board met, they approved a 6% across the board pay raise and said they do want clarification from the governor rather than just a social media post. They wanted something in writing saying that because Caddo has given the raise, his order would not apply here. Because, yes, y'all have taken care of your teachers, so you don't have to do what I'm ordering you to do. Do we know if we've gotten a direction from the governor on that yet that says y'all are okay?
No, we have not gotten anything like that to my knowledge to let us know that we're okay. And it's really kind of interesting when you think about it because, you know, our local parishes, you know, we get this MFP money and that's typically, you know, it's added to provide these stipends or to provide a permanent pay raise, which we haven't seen in a long time. You know, but the and then you have, you know, so the parishes are looking to the state to provide this funding. But then the state is telling the local parishes, like, hey, you have this money in a savings account or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, it's your job to support these pay raises and these stipends for your teachers. So what's unfortunate is happening is that the teachers and the school employees are kind of caught in this crossfire between the state and our local parishes. So we'll see. And so I think that's where you did see. And I know Caddo had prior to the executive order from the governor, Caddo had been talking about a pay raise. I know Bossier had been talking about the things they've been doing. DeSoto had not had a pay raise since 2014. So, you know, if the result of that pressure made these local parishes provide a permanent pay raise rather than a local stipend, you know, then that's going to be, you know, excellent. You know, so we'll see what, you know, what shakes out as far as if he'll still mandate them to do the stipend. The last meeting I was in Caddo, they did believe that they were going to have to do, you know, have the pay raise and then do the additional stipend from the state. So, you know, that must be the guidance they're still receiving at this moment.
And Jordan, at the state level, is there a concern with the teacher groups, and I guess anybody with government, on the process? To be fair, I am all in favor of the teachers getting the pay they've been getting, which is the stipend. And if it turns into a permanent part of their pay, then that's even better. My wife is a teacher, so in full disclosure, we benefit from this. But I think we're all looking at this because it's the stipend. But ultimately, I really have a problem with the process. What is the position of the teacher organizations vis-a-vis the process? Because if this is allowed to stand, are y'all concerned long-term for the MFP? Because the precedent would be that they could do this any session with any part of the MFP, not just the stipend. Would that be your read if this is allowed to stand?
That is definitely a concern. You know, when we talk about, you know, in our business in the union, you know, we say we're not much on giving up our rights, you know. And so in this case, if this is able to be done and local districts are forced to do that, it does kind of set a dangerous precedent, you know, for some of these parishes that, you know, are trying to do the right thing for their teachers and for their school employees. So, you know, that is concerning. It's concerning as well, you know, when we look at the amendment that failed and, you know, and then we look at, you know, what our members came back to say, over 65%, you know, not supporting this executive order. It makes you wonder who these elected political people, you know, these folks, who are they representing? You know, I mean, we see the importance of a pay raise just like everyone else. But if our members are saying, you know, we want one, but not like this, but they're voting against, you know, the people who elected them, that's concerning as well.
Senator Alan Seabaugh told us yesterday something that was shocking. And I want to get your opinion on it. He said there is only one person in state government that really knows how the MFP funding formula works. He didn't know. He said he doesn't think there are many people at all that know. And that's why we have a task force now that is going to drill down on the MFP and how it can be spent and what it can be used for. Is that shocking to hear someone say, we don't have anybody that really understands how that money is supposed to be doled out and used for? What is it used for?
I wish I could say that I was shocked, but I attend local board meetings all the time and, you know, attend meetings in the state as well. And no, I'm not. You know, you're not talking about people that necessarily have an education background that are, you know, being elected for these positions. You know, I mean, these are some very specific things when you start talking educator talk. You know, some of the acronyms and the different things that we say that people just that don't have a basic understanding. And I think because people are familiar with schools, because obviously we all went to one, they think they have a basic understanding, but whenever you start talking about the, you know, the minutiae of the MFP, you know, yeah, you do need some experts on there. You do need some people ensuring that they understand, you know, what this looks like and how important that funding and what those programs do for our students.
Jordan Thomas, Red River United, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
You bet. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, Scott Hughes, I need you to unravel what happened yesterday. The president called Senate Republicans together. They were going to talk about several things. The War Powers Act was a primary focus. They voted for the War Powers Act, saying he didn't have the authority to start the war with Iran.
That Tuesday night.
Yes. And then,
and for the record, that vote, which was close, there were two Republican senators missing.
Yep.
And J.D. Vance was not there. He's away negotiating the Iran peace settlement.
Right.
So the numbers favored the Democrats that night, on Tuesday night, and they passed what would be a censure resolution.
Yes, and Bill Cassidy voted with them, with the Democrats.
Cassidy and many others that are now currently at odds with the president.
Many others. So the president summons them to a lunch.
Well, actually, let's pause for a second. Okay. The lunch had long been planned.
Okay, good.
The lunch was planned well in advance of this.
Okay, good.
Because what was supposed to happen yesterday is the president was coming to Capitol Hill, a big Republican-planned propaganda for the Housing Act.
Yes.
The Road Home Act.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to sign this bipartisan legislation and then go into a luncheon with the Republican senators.
He didn't sign the Housing Act.
That had long been planned. And the Republicans, Mike Johnson, our local congressman and the Speaker of the House, they were kind of already in that early phase of holding press conferences, doing the media, announcing this great win for them, for the citizens, with this Housing Act. And the president goes on Twitter and does...
He's not signing it.
He pulls a grenade, throws it out, and says, I am not going to sign the Housing Act until I get my, it's called the SAVE Act, but it's the elections rules that he wants to put in place, and a few other things that aren't even election-oriented. So he basically throws a grenade into the party they were throwing on Capitol Hill to celebrate a bipartisan bill to help citizens, and still was going to lunch with them. And at lunch... Yep. Grenades were thrown everywhere. It was the knives
he
were out.
And Cassidy got into a little bit of a tiff.
He
Cassidy
and several
stands
people,
up.
But Cassidy specifically, yes.
Wow. And Cassidy said, American people want to know about the war. We owe it to them to tell them what's going on. It was supposed to be 4 weeks. Now it's 4 months. Please, Mr. President, we need to know. And the president called Cassidy a lunatic.
Among other things.
But then they summoned Cassidy into a separate meeting, right?
Well, after that luncheon, which blew up on Capitol Hill, the housing bill has not been signed.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back to that maybe.
Still waiting.
And Trump has said he will not sign the housing bill until he gets the SAVE Act. Now, a little political aside, bills can become law without the president's signature or the governor's signature.
Okay.
If it sits on his desk long enough, it automatically becomes law. So he didn't say he'd veto it. He said he wouldn't sign it. We'll wait and see after 10 days if he decides to veto it or not, or let it become law. But anyway, the lunch blows up and he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves Capitol Hill. Well, then Cassidy gets a call from J.D. Vance, I understand, Steve Witkoff, and some of the Iran team, who's now back from Switzerland.
Right.
And they're at the White House, and Cassidy apparently goes up to the White House. He gets the briefing he was asking for. He, the senator, not the U.S. people, he gets a briefing on Iran. And then late last night, the Senate does another resolution.
Yep. And Cassidy changed his vote.
Cassidy changed his vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The other two senators who were gone were back.
Right.
So now they have those two votes back. And also notably, Rand Paul, a very well-known senator, really an independent, to be honest. He votes with the Republicans. But Rand Paul did not vote. He decided to vote present because he was also a no vote.
Right.
And so he votes present because they basically changed their vote. And the language last night was, we're still not happy, but we don't want to pull the chair out from the president and the vice president when they're negotiating.
Okay.
To do this in the middle of a negotiation would have given Iran a big leverage point in these negotiations because we'd be pulling the military out.
So would you classify this as a Cassidy and Trump have kissed and made up or not even close?
No, not even close.
Okay.
Matter of fact, this was an escalation at a public level because all this could have been done privately.
Sure.
I think it blew up. The truth is, I think if Donald Trump had signed the Housing Act and gone into the private luncheon, then we would have heard about some maybe conversation.
Yeah.
But given the bombastic nature of where we are, particularly with Cassidy, remember, Tom Tillis is already there from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Cornyn is now there. John Cornyn from Texas.
Yep.
You've got these outlier senators now that, you know, whether Trump wants to replace them or not, that's his call. Whether that's the Republican Party's call. But what's clear is they're U.S. senators for 7 more months.
Yep. Got to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We will be talking more about that and more about the Housing Affordability Act and the SAVE Act connection and what that means for you and lots of other things coming up right here. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Okay, Scott Hughes. Put on your political hat and your political big boy pants. You ready?
I liked my soccer hat and jersey better. Do we have to do politics and ruin it?
All the commercials I'm seeing are all true, right?
If it's on the internet, it's true, right?
It's got to be, yeah. Yeah. It's gotten so ugly.
Well, we knew it would. I mean, if you and I assume we're talking about the U.S. Senate race.
Yes.
And the only side we're talking about is the Republicans. Nobody seems to care that Jamie Davis is going to... You want to talk about Jamie Davis, the Democratic candidate that's going to win?
Oh, no. That's one of the names? No, that's not it.
That would be the bet. For $100, could you, Aaron McCarty, tell me the two names on the Democratic side? You couldn't do it.
Nope.
There's no action. The Democrats, just for our audience, we'll do that side first. Jamie Davis is going to win the Democratic primary and be the Democratic candidate in November. Who's Jamie going to run against? Hmm. It's down to two. Let me guess. Julia Letlow or John Fleming?
The polls now show them pretty neck and neck. Fleming will tell you he's ahead. Do you believe all that?
I don't believe the polling you're seeing, no.
Mm-hmm. What's the flaw?
Well, the flaw is either side's going to tell you they're ahead.
Yeah.
And again, depending on the poll that they take, on the day they take it, and the question they ask.
Mm-hmm.
And the real question, and we saw some of this the first round, this is really Louisiana's first time in 20 years to poll a closed primary. And closed primaries are very difficult because who are we polling? Are we polling just Republicans? It's a Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
What weight do we give, to be honest, people like you? You are a no-party voter, if I can share that.
Sure.
And so you tend to vote candidate, not party.
Right.
And so I think this time you chose to caucus with the Republicans.
I did.
So how do we account for people like you? What are you going to do? You chose to count. Maybe you chose to caucus with the Republicans because you were for or against Cassidy.
Right.
Now what do you do this round? Do you care the second round?
Absolutely,
you might. But if we look at, let's go to Texas, where we had the Paxson Cornyn race.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a drop off of 600,000 Republicans. 1.5 million voted the first round, 600,000 voted the second round. That's what I think the big thing we're looking at here is. We saw a pretty good turnout the first round when it was Letlow, Fleming, and Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Letlow got 45% of that race. She only needed five more points.
Yep.
Cassidy got about 25%, 20%.
So folks would say she's a shoe-in, but
mathematically, she
should
have won it pretty easy. And I personally believe mathematically she's going to win it pretty easy.
Really?
I personally believe everything I'm watching, she feels comfortably that she's going to win it. She's not doing your show, is she?
Nope.
She doesn't need that. That's the actions of a front runner. If you step back and do what I do, what I see right now is Julia Letlow acting like someone who knows she's winning the race. She's not making appearances. She's not doing anything that could possibly harm her. She's running her TV spots, and she's quite comfortable with where she is. I see John Fleming doing everything that a person behind is doing, appearing anywhere they can appear.
Are the Cassidy voters going to come back out?
I think some of them will.
And who do they support?
Again, all she has to do is get one out of five, mathematically. Now, the numbers would be a little different. I think turnout's going to go way low. We actually think turnout's going to be below 20%, could be below 15%. So when turnout goes low, that is going to give, to be honest, Fleming a better chance because he's clearly the more conservative. I've said that. He's clearly the more conservative candidate. He'll be very attractive to the base of the Republican Party, the just Republican Party.
Does President Trump know he's supporting the more liberal candidate? You say Fleming's the most conservative. You would think Trump would be supporting that candidate.
I think President Trump supports the winning candidate. And I think the record's pretty clear on that. And I think if Trump thought at all that Letlow would lose, he would have hedged his bet. He's done that in some other states.
Mm-hmm.
He's backed up and done both candidates. Trump, to my knowledge, has not only not changed his endorsement, he's doubling down on it tonight. He's doing a phone rally, a tele-rally for Letlow tonight.
I am
a registered Republican. I do get all of the mailings.
Right.
And for the record, my wife is a registered Democrat, and she gets all of those mailings and calls. So at my house, we get everything.
I'm worried now I'm going to get everything because I got a thing from Jamie Davis yesterday.
As an independent, you will. As we say independent, we mean no party now.
Right. I don't want all that crap.
Well, see, Jamie knows, he probably knows you can't vote. He's on the ballot Saturday. Right. Well, he is. We'll take it back. He's on the ballot Saturday.
Democratic side.
But he's going to win. Most people believe that. Jamie's already looking ahead to November.
Okay.
And I made this statement to you off the air, and I want to be careful. I don't want to be people to overreact to it. But Jamie is going to be very competitive in November. This is not necessarily whoever wins the Letlow Fleming race is your U.S. senator. I think with what we're seeing across the country, particularly with the Republican drop-off numbers we're seeing, because what's happening on the Republican side is they're having to choose between a moderate candidate and a conservative candidate.
Okay.
And then when they do that, you're seeing the same thing in Texas with Paxton and Cornyn. When they do that, they end up upsetting part of their base.
Right.
Who then now can't come out and vote for that woke rhino, or they are not going to vote for that guy that fought my candidate. And so Jamie Davis could have a backdoor into this thing in November.
Interesting. U.S. soccer match tonight. I'm going to get Scott to assess the U.S. team and our chances when we get back.
Are we breaking down football?
Absolutely. 1017 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
.1017 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Mike is off. I got my friend Scott Hughes in studio with us this morning. You are a monster soccer fan, as am I, and the U.S. team plays tonight. I'm a little bit concerned because it's a 9 p.m. match start time.
9 p.m. They're playing on the West Coast, so they're kicking off at 7. Remember, that makes it cooler out in California. That'd be good for us.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're concerned because we have to get up early.
Right.
But stay up and watch this.
I think I'm going to take a long nap late in the day and then stay up and watch this match because we're going to play Turkey. I'm a little bit concerned that we may not see, you know, our superstars. But I don't know that we have huge superstars. I think we have a lot of guys that are very well versed and do a great job. What are you watching for tonight? We don't need to win. We've already made it to the knockout rounds. Turkey is out, so they don't. There's nothing for them to play for.
So I'm looking for a few things as a U.S. soccer fan. Number one, even though we don't have to win, I'm looking for us to win.
Okay.
I think in a tournament you want to keep momentum. You don't want to. We're gonna play down a little bit, but we should be able to beat Turkey with our second team. We should be able to be. You don't want to go into the knockout round in a loss. So I am looking for us to be competitive in the play. That's number one. Number two, I don't want anybody to get hurt. The last thing you can have, a Canadian player broke a leg, you know, in the first round, really hurt Canada's chances.
That. Yeah.
You don't want to get hurt. Number three, I'm looking at how our coach manages this situation. Who gets minutes? I fully expect, well, for starters, if you know soccer, there's what's called yellow cards and red cards. And if you get two yellow cards in a row, then you have to miss a game. We have four players who have picked up a yellow card in the first two games. Nothing wrong. They just committed a more serious foul. So the smart play is don't play any of those four.
Sit them down.
Sit them down. Don't risk the second cheap yellow card and then missing the games that matter.
Right.
So you're probably not going to see Tyler Adams, Balogun, who is our main striker. He's been phenomenal. You're not going to see Chris Richards or Antonio Robinson. They're going to probably just not play. They're going to let their backups play and protect their status for second round. That means you're going to see a bunch of second teamers. I'm curious to see if we see. We have one star. The world would say we have one star. It's Christian Pulisic. And he played half of the first game. We were comfortably up at half. He apparently had an ankle injury. He sat the second half and did not play the second game, which we also won. So there's an expectation that we'll see him for a little bit. It makes sense to put him out there for a little bit, let him, you know, get stretched out, let him play a little bit. But we don't want to get him hurt, don't want to really wear him down. So we're going to see some of the younger players, the exciting one to watch. He's been a phenomenal guy. He plays on the right side up front for us. His name's Chris Freeman. Now, he is young, and he's a soccer star, but everybody knows his dad, Antonio Freeman, Green Bay Packer legend Antonio Freeman. This is his son, Chris Freeman. He's world class. He's got speed.
Wow.
He could be a real star tonight. And then you will see people like Pepe. He is the third striker. He'll have a chance to shine tonight in a game that we should win, but it will be a little rough. Turkey's playing for both teams are playing for pride. Turkey was playing for pride, and the United States is playing to win. It should be a fun game at 9 o'clock.
Absolutely. USA men's team, 9 o'clock our time. USA takes on Turkey in their final group stage. They move on then to the knockout rounds. I'm excited about tonight. I'm looking forward to it. We'll have more coming up next right here, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Oh, Scott Hughes is in for Mike Martindale today. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here. Hope Mike is enjoying his time off.
Yes, I'm sure he is. I have to ask you about, we have talked a little bit about the billionaire tax in California. They are putting on the ballot in November for the residents to vote on a one-time tax on anybody that's considered a billionaire, has a net worth of $1 billion or more. My question to you from the housing perspective, if you're the Oprah Winfrey's of the world, who she's worth $5 billion, just chump change compared to some of them, she'd have to write a check for $125 million if she wants to be considered still a resident of California. A, does she sell her $100 million Santa Barbara estate and then move to Hawaii or Colorado where she's got houses? And if she does, that's going to cause a housing mess in California, because if these billionaires decide they're going to sell their homes, A, who's buying them? Because they have to be a billionaire to buy these properties, and no billionaires are going to be coming in. Isn't that going to be a problem?
Well, and again, thanks for the show prep, friend, because I could have looked it up or called my real estate friends. To be honest, I don't know a lot about it beyond what you just said.
Okay.
So let's break it down. If as you outlined it, yes. If as you outlined it, it potentially could hurt housing, but only high end. Because if you're making a regular income, no, it's not going to trickle down. Because the fact that Oprah can't, you know, afford her $200 million mansion has no impact on Joe Blow, who's got a, you know, two bath house in the suburbs, mm-hmm. because he's not being impacted at all. So it would affect high dollar housing. But the problem becomes, first of all, I'll say this for the record, not even having looked at the bill, which is, I'm just off the cuff. I'm not sure it's constitutional. I'm not sure that you can, I think even if they pass it, I think someone's going to go to court and likely challenge it. I'm not aware of any other time in the country you get assessed a one-time lifetime fee. So let's go that route. If in fact it is a one-time fee, well, if Oprah pays it, she won't get a hit again.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, okay. If she pays it, if it's one time in this moment in time, well, she gets penalized for being a resident that moment. But next year, if somebody comes in, it's a billionaire. Do they have to pay it to move? I don't understand how it's going to be implemented. Mm-hmm. That's why. And then you and I were talking off air briefly. Normally taxation, income tax type taxation, is a tax on the income you earned in a given period in that jurisdiction.
Ah, okay.
And I gave the example of a Major League Baseball player. They mm-hmm. play 162 games, 81 are at home. 81 games get taxed at whatever their home stadium tax rate is. The other 81 get taxed wherever they play the game. You know, if you play in New York and Florida.
You pay the New York tax.
A major league sports person has an account that has to file taxes in lots of jurisdictions.
Wow.
Okay. To be honest, that's why it does make it attractive to play like in Canada for some of these people, mm-hmm. because they don't pay U.S. taxes on half their games. So I don't know enough, but in theory, you're correct. If you want to start taxing high income people, specifically for being high income, let's just go there.
Mm-hmm.
In the long run, they're going to choose not to live there. They're going to choose to move somewhere where the taxes are lower. And I think we are seeing some of that in general. It's benefiting places like Colorado and Texas right now.
Sure.
A lot of people are moving out of California for various reasons.
Right.
Although I do like to point out, it's still the state, the majority. If you look at two charts, that's amazing. The number, and one side will show you one chart, the number of people leaving California.
Sure.
That is correct. California has more people leaving than any other state in the union, but it also has more people moving in than any other state in the union.
Right.
It's the largest state by far. It dwarfs everybody else, including Florida and Texas. But people are moving out because they're tired of paying certain things. But they moved to places where the taxes are lower. Texas famously doesn't have high taxes.
Sure.
But they have high property taxes.
Right.
So in the end, real estate is going to be affected. And yet, remember, the key to real estate is the key here in Shreveport-Bossier is that housing prices are permeated on one thing. Do you have a buyer? Can you sell it? Can you rent it?
Mm-hmm. Housing Affordability Act and the SAVE Act coming up after 8 o'clock. Scott is going to solve both of those problems when we come back. 101.7 FM, 710. FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. Mike out, Scott Hughes in for Mike. Scott, first off, Congress overwhelmingly passed the Housing Affordability Act. The president was going to have a big signing ceremony, but then decided he's not going to sign it. First, tell me what the Housing Affordability Act does, Mr. Housing.
Well, officially it's called the Road to Housing Act, mm-hmm. and it does a lot of things. But fundamentally, as the CEO of the Realtor Association, this was actually our bill. We worked a long time. I was personally in Washington last week in the office of all of our congresspeople, you know, lobbying for this bill. Mm-hmm. And we did pass it. You said overwhelmingly. I would like to point out, in the House, it passed 358 to 32. And in the Senate, it passed 85 to 5.
Goodness.
This wasn't even close. This is a bipartisan bill. Everyone wants to lower housing, make housing more affordable. Fundamentally, it does really three things. It makes the cost of buying a house less. Okay. Mm-hmm. It tries to reduce the cost to build houses. It tries to make them more affordable for first time. It puts grants out there. It does a lot for veterans. We're big veterans, despite some clickbait things that say Louisiana's not patriotic. We're very patriotic state. We have a lot of veterans
here.
We do, absolutely. It does a lot for veterans. It helps them. There's rural programs, which helps Louisiana. And it does a lot to help some of the banking side of this. It makes buying a house more affordable.
Okay.
The last thing it does, which was the controversial piece that tied it up, and the president, to be fair, was a big advocate of this, it tries to cap the number of homes, properties, an investor can own. One of the problems we're having in the country today is you might have your house and maybe a mom and pop rental house or two.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's always happened. People own rental homes.
Sure.
Well, now we have corporations buying hundreds and thousands of homes and just renting them out. And the more inventory these corporate buyers buy, those will never be sold for single resident houses. They're just rent houses the rest of the time. So they're trying to cap that. I think 250 was the number they settled on, which ultimately will also put more inventory back in the market. We need inventory. So all that said, it would make it more affordable, cheaper, and easier to buy a house.
Okay. Why the president's not signing it?
We have no idea. And I will say this. I do not think it has anything to do with what's in the housing bill. I think it has to do with the president seems to be, and I'm going to use a rare word for me, he seems to be obsessed with the SAVE Act, which is a political resolution that he wants passed that has mostly to do with elections. But it also has some of his social concerns in there, which have nothing to do with elections. And overall, it's a piece of legislation that the Senate has said privately to him, personally to him, and publicly, John Thune has said, there are not the votes. Mm-hmm. And so the Senate's not going to pass the SAVE Act. The president is trying everything he can do to leverage them, to threaten them, to get them to pass it. And this just seems to be his latest idea to take a very popular bill and say, I'm not going to sign it until you give me the SAVE Act.
What's bad in the SAVE Act?
Well, politically, I think that there depends who you talk to. You know, some of them like this and not this. Some of them don't like this, but like this. I think that ultimately, the biggest thing I think that people will go to with the SAVE Act, philosophy, I'll go there. I am a Republican. I'll go there. The SAVE Act really puts the federal government in charge of elections. It gives the federal government a lot of control over something that most believe clearly is the right of a state.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't have a party, in my opinion, a philosophy that says, last year for Roe v. Wade, we believe in states' rights. States can do whatever they want.
Sure.
But now on elections, we want to take that away from the state, which has been clearly in the power of states to run their own elections. And so we're getting a policy mismatch when you ask the political question. And there are U.S. senators that sit there and understand what I just said. And they're going to go, I'm for states' rights. It's a longstanding principle, and this violates a state's rights. And so we may or may not like mail-in voting here in Louisiana.
Right.
But there are clearly seven states where their legislature, their governor, their people have long said we're happy with mail-in voting for our state. Mm-hmm. If your state doesn't want to do it, don't do it in Louisiana. But don't stop Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Wyoming. This works very well in some of the rural states. And so when you ask the question, that's why, and then of course, there are some things that get thrown in the SAVE Act that have nothing to do with voting. They're more of the social policies. And people say, why are you trying to mix those together?
But I would ask you, and this is kind of a philosophical question, in watching what's been happening with elections, do you think our faith in our election system has been eroded? And I see the answer to that is yes, and getting worse. That is a concern of mine. We don't trust or have faith in our elections anymore.
Well, and I understand that. And a lot of that, I believe, is because of the language and the conversation we're creating around it. But the truth is, we have the safest, most integrity election system in the world. Donald Trump's own government said that the last time he was in office. I've seen 50 studies done. There were 55 court cases, I think, filed around the country after the last election. There was no credible evidence produced that there would be any fraud on any. You will find occasionally one or two votes. I think I saw Louisiana found somebody from the Netherlands who voted in Louisiana mm-hmm. last. One person in 4 million. That's the kind of numbers you're talking about.
But what's going on in California then? When we see all these ballots coming in after the fact in that mayor's race out there, it's a mess.
Well, I think the issue you're getting to is, and so I'll say for the record, I don't think there's cheating in California. And to the record, no politician has shown any credible evidence, including the Speaker of the House.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I was really embarrassed by Mr. Johnson's comment that he said, we can't prove they're doing it, we just know it. He's a lawyer. That's not a legal answer. Mm-hmm. If you believe there's fraud, show the evidence. If you show evidence, we had a famous example here in Caddo Parish. We had a sheriff's race that basically tied, that was in the margin, that we had to recount. You'll remember in that race, even going through all the ballots, we were talking dozens, maybe 100 questionable ballots, not wrong ballots.
Right.
So the scale is not that what people think that it is. We have a very good system. You had Nancy Landry on, I think, yesterday, and we replayed this morning. She runs a very good system. Nothing's perfect. And so you look at California, the issue that gets exposed is we've had mail-in ballots for decades.
Sure.
My father voted mail-in. My mother voted mail-in their entire career as they were military moving around. The president has basically voted mail-in ballot most of his life because he lived in New York but voted in Florida. There's nothing wrong with mail-in ballots. I think what happens is what day, and this is the conversation they really should have, not should mail-in ballots be allowed or not, what day should mail-in ballots be arriving? Okay.
Right.
Personally, I'll give my opinion since that's what we're doing here this morning on the radio. I think mail-in ballots are a fine instrument if a state wants to use them. I do think they should be in before the election. Like, for example, early voting, that's not mail-in voting.
Right.
Early voting is very popular. We open the machines up. You can go to the library or the courthouse and you can vote. But we close early voting a week before the election. You can't early vote up until the day before. Mm-hmm. It's the Saturday before we stop it. And I think that if you move to a system where mail-in ballots had to be postmarked a week before, just call it early voting. Whether you want to early vote by machine or early vote by mail-in ballot, do it. But it has to be turned in. The real issue that's being exposed more with the mail-in ballots these days, quite frankly, is the absolute destruction of the post office. The post office used to be very efficient. If you drop something in, even the day of the election, we might get it by the Monday after.
Right.
And you've done this for a long time. We've always not declared the winner on election night. We've always had a process in law that says we open the machines, we verify the ballots, and then they are certified, the election certified 3 or 4 days later.
Sure.
Well, in the old days, all those mail-in ballots, which were fewer, came in, the military votes, the people away. Mm-hmm. We added those to the total. They were really irrelevant statistically, and we certified the vote.
Yep.
But these days, when one-third of the people are voting by mail-in, and the U.S. Post Office is failing in delivery timely of those, we have a problem.
Absolutely.
And California has 55 million people.
Yeah.
Whatever the number is out there.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we're keeping an eye on it. We will talk more about that. And we got to talk more about the Senate race when we come back. Can we do that?
the Letlo Fleming brouhaha.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe we
brouhaha.
Should build a cage and put him in and let him fight.
Who would show up?
Oh, the people would show up.
Would both candidates show up, though? That's the question. We'll talk about that when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
We are back with my buddy Scott Hughes, who is in studio with me in his USA men's soccer jersey.
I'm fired up. USA. USA.
Big night tonight.
Well, it's an interesting night. We've already won. For those who may just be tuning in, the U.S. men's national soccer team has already won our pool play. Mm-hmm. We are already into the single elimination tournament,
yep.
Which, to be honest, is as far as we've ever gone in the World Cup.
Yep, it's exciting. Senate race. Saturday is Election Day. Can I ask you a couple of questions about that race? Because I'm a little bit still uninformed about a couple of things. You have said that John Fleming is clearly the most conservative in that race.
I think that's a fair statement. I think if you look at it and you look at the two candidates, particularly left, he is clearly the most conservative candidate. His conservative credentials are legitimate. I'll say that.
And hers are not?
I'm not saying she's not conservative. I'm saying clearly if we're putting him on the spectrum, John is farther to the right than she is. John's an original founder of the Freedom Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
I think Letlo is a more, I'm not going to say she's a rhino or she's woke. I mean, that's what, but she's clearly not as conservative as John. She's been a little more open and more moderate. And the truth is she's more traditional Republican, you know, and John is probably more of a MAGA Republican.
That's interesting, but MAGA supporting her.
Well, I don't know that MAGA is supporting her. I think MAGA is actually supporting John Fleming.
Okay.
I think Donald Trump is supporting her.
Right.
And Donald Trump, who, yes, the MAGA movement is, he's sort of the head of it by default.
Sure.
But to be honest, that's why he's at odds with Tucker Carlson. That's why he's at odds with Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of the other MAGA people. They believe he's not MAGA anymore. They believe that he is the president, and the two are different things. And so I think Fleming is actually MAGA. I think the MAGA people are going to vote for him, particularly in North Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Letlo is, she's friends with the governor. That's clear. The governor's probably her big patron. And I think Donald Trump's backing her. And remember that John Fleming likes to say that the president wasn't aware. Julia Letlo was put in the race because they didn't believe John Fleming could win.
Okay. And you believe that?
I do believe that. They went and recruited her, and she came in with Trump's endorsement.
But don't you think her mission was to get rid of Cassidy? And now that that's done, that President Trump would be happy with either one of them?
Well, I think if that were the case, President Trump would say that. He has said that in other races. There are some races where he said President Trump prides himself on picking winners. And he is almost undefeated in close primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one or two places where he's gotten worried and he's hedged his bet. He's endorsed both sides.
Okay.
He hasn't endorsed both sides in this one. He's doing a rally tonight for Letlo. I do think that a lot of Letlo's politics run through Jeff Landry. I think that Jeff Landry, to be honest, may have his eyes on that seat down the road.
Whoa.
He won't be the governor forever.
Okay.
Ms. Letlo may want to do it for a while. We're getting into now black helicopter stuff.
Yeah.
But I think if John Fleming became the U.S. senator, he would be it for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Landry knows that. I think Landry wanted a friend.
Do you think Landry would control Letlo as our senator?
I don't think anybody can... Let me say this. I thought there was a time nobody controlled U.S. senators, but we live in a world, and people want to say that, oh, Jeff Landry controls the U.S. senator. I would argue there's 50 other U.S. senators right now that seem to be pretty controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I watched them flop a vote last night that they took the night before.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can argue
did.
That. So I think it's kind of heretical to say that U.S. senators being controlled. They all are being controlled right now by a party apparatus. And so Letlo has friends with the governor. That is fair. But I think that if she was elected, that she would be more independent than people are giving her credit for. And to be honest, that may be the fear of some Republicans, that she would be more independent.
Okay. Interesting. Election Day is Saturday. Don't forget to go vote. 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, the votes are done. State legislature has voted on the governor's executive order. They've approved the governor's executive order, but it's still facing a court hearing. We will talk, if you missed our conversation with Jordan Thomas with Red River United, the teacher union, you can hear that coming up next, right here, 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Seven FM, 710 Keel on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Jordan Thomas with Red River United. Mike is out today, Jordan. I got my friend Scott Hughes here, but he's very, very well informed about what's been going on with this teacher stipend mess. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly to support the governor in his plan to move some of the MFP money to a teacher stipend. But that plan's on hold pending a court hearing next week in Baton Rouge. Is the mud less cloudy today or no?
I think no. And you describe, I think you described it as a mess, and I would agree.
So essentially, I know you were polling your members, maybe not specifically on this issue, but we don't yet know if the governor is ordering parishes to use some of the MFP money for a stipend. What cuts would be made? Is this the governor ordering cuts? Is that okay? Is that outside of his authority? How do your members feel about this? They obviously want a stipend.
Right. Well, and that's what we did, you know, and like you said, we surveyed our members and, you know, from throughout the state, and we looked at about 70% of our members, you know, obviously are, you know, finding getting a pay raise is important, or at least maintaining what we've gotten, because we have gotten these stipends for the past several years. But when we did specifically ask them about this executive order, and about 65% of our members said that they opposed this executive order. And, you know, I think we can go back to the constitutional amendment that we had, where, you know, we looked at it from an educator standpoint and said, you know, listen, we, at the expense of our students, we don't want this money kind of thing. Like we, of course, we recognize we need a pay raise. You know, we would like to have at least a stipend in this scenario, but we want there to be, another path forward rather than, you know, making cuts to our students.
Jordan, this is Scott Hughes. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is the position, I guess, of the teacher organizations vis-a-vis actually paying the, quote, stipend or pay raise? Because I know the judge is holding a hearing next week. There seems to be a lot of sniping about, oh, that order only affects the governor, not the legislature. Do you believe the order would enjoin the school districts from paying it out? Because once they start paying it out, you can't go get it back.
You know, I honestly do not have that answer. I don't know what they will do. You know, I know, you know, just here in Caddo Parish, you know, there was a little stipend that they were going to pay their employees at the end of June. And then because we're the uncertainty with the governor's, executive order, you know, up and, you know, pump the brakes on that one. So, you know, I don't know. I know from the perspective of the superintendents, as I've talked to several of them throughout this area, you know, they're very concerned about what this is going to look like, you know, as far as, you know, impacting programs and things like that for our students. So I'm not sure how that will happen. I don't think anybody's going to joyfully just go ahead and do it without being, you know, it being in that you mandated. But, you know, but I guess we'll see.
And I guess a follow up to that, to your knowledge, are any of the school districts litigants to GIS? I know that I think the lead litigant, Michael Falk, who I actually worked with years ago, he was the head, one of the superintendents here in the state and may have headed the Superintendents mm-hmm. Association. Are any of these school boards litigants to this, or is this just the three or four citizen plaintiffs, even though they all have tremendous education backgrounds?
Right. I do know their superintendents, but I do know that you know, like, for example, St. Tammany Parish, their school board came out against it and were writing a resolution. So I think there is going to be some pushback, you know, throughout the state. So there are, you know, there's those concerns from some of the local parishes, you know, that would encompass the board rather than just being the superintendent.
Jordan, the last time the school board met, they approved a 6% across the board pay raise and said they do want clarification from the governor rather than just a social media post. They wanted something in writing saying that because Caddo has given the raise, his order would not apply here. Because, yes, y'all have taken care of your teachers, so you don't have to do what I'm ordering you to do. Do we know if we've gotten a direction from the governor on that yet that says y'all are okay?
No, we have not gotten anything like that, to my knowledge, to let us know that we're okay. And it's really kind of interesting when you think about it, because, you know, our local parishes, you know, we get this MFP money, and that's typically, you know, it's added to provide these stipends or to provide a permanent pay raise, which we haven't seen in a long time. You know, but the and then you have, you know, so the parishes are looking to the state to provide this funding. But then the state is telling the local parishes, like, hey, you have this money in a savings account or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, it's your job to support these pay raises and these stipends for your teachers. So what's unfortunate is happening is that the teachers and the school employees are kind of caught in this crossfire between the state and our local parishes. So we'll see. And so I think that's where you did see. And I know Caddo had prior to the executive order from the governor, Caddo had been talking about a pay raise. I know Bossier had been talking about the things they've been doing. DeSoto had not had a pay raise since 2014. So, you know, if the result of that pressure made these local parishes provide a permanent pay raise rather than a local stipend, you know, then that's going to be, you know, excellent. You know, so we'll see what, you know, what shakes out as far as if he'll still mandate them to do the stipend. The last meeting I was in Caddo, they did believe that they were going to have to do, you know, have the pay raise and then do the additional stipend from the state. So, you know, that must be the guidance they're still receiving at this moment.
And Jordan, at the state level, is there a concern with the teacher groups, and I guess anybody with government, on the process? To be fair, I am all in favor of the teachers getting the pay they've been getting, which is the stipend. And if it turns into a permanent part of their pay, then that's even better. My wife is a teacher, so in full disclosure, we benefit from this. But I think we're all looking at this because it's the stipend. But ultimately, I really have a problem with the process. What is the position of the teacher organizations vis-a-vis the process? Because if this is allowed to stand, are y'all concerned long-term for the MFP? Because the precedent would be that they could do this any session with any part of the MFP, not just the stipend. Would that be your read if this is allowed to stand?
You know, that is definitely a concern. You know, when we talk about, you know, in our business in the union, you know, we say we're not much on giving up our rights, you know. And so in this case, if this is able to be done and local districts are forced to do that, it does kind of set a dangerous precedent, you know, for some of these parishes that, you know, are trying to do the right thing for their teachers and for their school employees. So, you know, that is concerning. It's concerning as well, you know, when we look at the amendment that failed and, you know, and then we look at, you know, what our members came back to say, over 65%, you know, not supporting this executive order. It makes you wonder who these elected political people, you know, these folks, who are they representing? You know, I mean, we see the importance of a pay raise just like everyone else. But if our members are saying, you know, we want one, but not like this, but they're voting against, you know, the people who elected them, that's concerning as well.
Senator Alan Seabaugh told us yesterday something that was shocking. And I want to get your opinion on it. He said there is only one person in state government that really knows how the MFP funding formula works. He didn't know. He said he doesn't think there are many people at all that know. And that's why we have a task force now that is going to drill down on the MFP and how it can be spent and what it can be used for. Is that shocking to hear someone say, we don't have anybody that really understands how that money is supposed to be doled out and used for? What is it used for?
I wish I could say that I was shocked, but I attend local board meetings all the time and, you know, attend meetings in the state as well. And no, I'm not. You know, you're not talking about people that necessarily have an education background that are, you know, being elected for these positions. You know, I mean, these are some very specific things when you start talking educator talk. You know, some of the acronyms and the different things that we say that people just that don't have a basic understanding. And I think because people are familiar with schools, because obviously we all went to one. they think they have a basic understanding, but whenever you start talking about the, you know, the minutia of the MFP, you know, yeah, you do need some experts on there. You do need some people ensuring that they understand, you know, what this looks like and how important that funding and what those programs do for our students.
Jordan Thomas, Red River United, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
You bet. 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, Ruben, you're going to have to work for a minute.
Fine.
I went and got gas yesterday. I filled up the tank yesterday. I found a spot where I was paying $3.18 a gallon. I thought, that's not bad, but it ain't good.
No. No, no, no.
Anything
over $2.50 is insanity.
Yes. And President Trump is now ticked. He says the oil companies are now gouging us. He says crude oil is down 24% in the past month, and our gas prices have not dropped by that much.
I mean, we've known that for years.
Yes.
He didn't have to tell us that. We knew that we were being gouged.
We're not stupid. He's now ordering the Department of Justice to investigate big oil for price gouging after the crude oil prices dropped while the pump prices are barely moving. And I'm looking, have you looked at the gas prices here locally?
I'm looking at it. Nothing under $3, but...
Yeah.
Super One has it for $3.08 right now.
Okay. We're still paying a dollar more than we were before the war.
Exactly.
It needs to come down to what we were paying before the war. And my problem is if you look at the prices here locally, there are a couple that are at $3.08, but then there are still a ton of them at $3.29, $3.30.
Oh, yeah.
We know you're gouging us now.
Absolutely.
Because if Super One can sell it for $3.08...
Why can't Circle K?
Why can't Murphy?
Right.
Why can't Raceway? Loves? Why can't you all? It's ridiculous when a grocery store can sell it for $3.08. We know what you're doing.
We know what you're doing. We all know. We've been knowing. But what do?
I'm fed up with it.
I'm beyond fed up with it.
How are people that are, and this is what troubles me. And sometimes people say, "Oh, you're too liberal," whatever. The people that are working paycheck to paycheck and are trying to go to their jobs and drive their car, they're struggling with this right now. This is killing them to pay these gas prices. It's time for corporate America to step up. I mean,
absolutely.
Come on.
And I mean, we're all right, but we're still having to drive damn near to East Texas every single morning.
Yes, absolutely. And it's expensive.
It puts a hurt on you.
And I hope the Justice Department can do something about it. And he particularly was calling out, I think he was calling out Exxon and some of the other big companies, Chevron specifically. He's posted a video on Truth Social where he says they're not dropping their price at the pump commensurate with the sharply lower prices they're paying for oil. Customers are being gouged. And I have called on the DOJ to immediately start looking into this. Gas prices better start going down a lot faster than what I'm seeing.
The solution is to look into it and make an example.
Yes.
You got to lock somebody up.
Absolutely. If you know what they're paying for it and you know now what they're charging us for it and you can show they're making way more money than they should be on this, and their prices should be way below $3 a gallon. Somebody's got to face the music.
Right. Either lock them up or find them out of existence.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? If you see gas prices somewhere in our community that are close to $3 a gallon, buy it there.
Yeah.
Buy it from those folks because those folks are trying to bring their prices down. The people that are still selling it for $3.20, $3.30 a gallon.
Oh, I'm seeing $3.40.
Stop buying it from them.
Yeah.
They're gouging you.
Exactly.
And they know they are gouging you and they can make billions and billions of dollars. I'm sorry. I'm on my soapbox.
Way to end on a pib.
Yeah. Pibbed it all up today. Sorry about that. Go USA. Big game tonight, 9 o'clock, USA versus Turkey. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.